than it meant I wanted it. I must have wanted to be raped again. Don't you think so? Thank you. So I don't have any questions for you, but if you have any for me, that'll be okay.
Other personalities in the person of Kukwa Jibodi Yemeke. Kukwa characterizes herself as a memoirist, essayist, and a writer of social commentary. She is the author of several essays and prose poems. Her scholarly and writing interests lie at the intersection of race and skin color, African culture, black women's bodies, expression of voice, and fictional writing. She is the author of several essays and prose, some of the essays have been anthologized in African Women Writing Resistance, Becoming By, Bisexual Voices from Around the World, and Inside Your Ear. Her essay, The Audacity to Remain Single, Single Black Women in the Black Church, won the Marcella Altius Reed Award for Queer Essay, and is anthologized in Queer Religion, too. Please let's welcome Kukwa Jibodi Yemeke.
Minutes ago I thought, I can't read this. There's no way I'm going to read this. And then I thought about all the women that have passed through my life the last 10 years who have stories to tell that have not had the space to tell those stories. So I read for them tonight. I have four snippets, and they are my story as well as my mother's story. They're sort of mixed together, so they're not chronological. Here we go. See, you are wet, because you like it. It feels good, huh? I nod my head innocently. I'm not sure what else to say. I was taught to be honest. He taught me how I got wet, so he said I liked it. I began rubbing myself real early, like age 7, taught me how, and it felt good. I also started to pee in my bed right after that. I was sure the rubbing caused it. God was angry at me for doing it and liking it. But I couldn't stop. I used to pray at my altar every night. I prayed for strength to stop, but the devil was too strong. I was worried I'd never stop peeing in my bed. He said I liked it. That's why he did it so often. He started touching me every time Mama went to work and he was watching me. He owned the house we lived in. He would make Auntie, his wife, feed me, and then we would go to their room and watch television. When I was giggling at Papa's shows, he touched me. First, it was outside my Stars and Moon panty. Then later, he pushed the panties to the side and started rubbing. Sometime later, he put his thing on my thing and rubbed. He didn't do this often because Auntie might come to the door and he would have to put on his clothes. I knew what we were doing was wrong. He was big. I was afraid to tell Mama because I didn't want her to lose the room or send me back to Ghana. I was very happy. I was finally living in the same country and house as Mama. I loved her so much and cried every day after she moved to Liberia. Before the war started, she came for me. She made Grandmama bring me and Senna to visit her. She asked Grandmama to leave me when she and Senna went back to Ghana. I was happy to be with my Mama after 3 years. Me and her, we were going to live happily ever after. Senna had Grandmama and now I had Mama. When Senna and Grandmama left, Mama said the holiday was over. She went to work every day. She said she had to send money back to Ghana. Sometimes I went to the hospital with her. I played with some of the doctor's children. He did it often after Mama stopped taking me to work. The other boarders saw us. Auntie Masno lived in one of the other rooms in the big house. Her room was by the front door. She was young and dressed very nice. I was in love with her. I followed her around the house whenever I wasn't in his room. She let me stay in her room when she was home and Mama was at work. She always gave me hugs and made funny faces so I could smile. She gave me candy and let me watch shows on her small TV. She didn't touch me down there. One day, Auntie Masno left the house with her things. I grabbed her skirt and wouldn't let her leave. I had hiccups from crying so much. Mama came for me and told me we would go visit her. I knew now I would have to stay in his room all the time. I cried even more. When the boarders left, I stayed. I was fed and rubbed until Mama came home. I told no one about what happened the year I lived in Monrovia. I told no one that the big man in the big house had taught me something that made me to pee in my bed. I knew God was not happy with me. I prayed anyway. My prayers worked. One day, I felt peeing and rubbing myself. It was good Grandmama never knew. She would have caned me for doing it. So this is a second vignette. Rape is rape, my therapist says to me 25 years later. I shake my head vehemently as my voice changes to that of a 7-year-old. But he never put it in, and I was wet every time, so it meant I liked it. Well, children are sexual beings too. Even at a young age, arousal occurs, she pointed out. I cover my ears. I don't want to listen. I feel real dirty. I feel bad for even talking to my therapist about it. I wasn't supposed to tell anyone. If I told, I'd be blamed for it. He said he'd make sure of it. So I didn't tell until I was 19, when Mama started warning me about boys. They are worse here in America. They have things called date rape drugs, and they put those in your drinks when you're not looking. Then they take you someplace and harm you. I rolled my eyes at her. Did she think I was 12? But Mama was an RN. She saw these girls in the ER all the time. I told her I wasn't one of those girls. I was smart and would be safe. I told her not to worry. I didn't tell her she had nothing to worry about because I wasn't going to let another man touch me. I'd die before I let that happen to me. I was never, ever going to open my legs again. Not for them, not for anyone after him. Then I met my first real boyfriend, Baldwin, and started dating for 3 years, holding hands and kissing until it was obvious there was something more. I wouldn't let him touch me, always finding some excuse to keep my clothes on. He paid for a sex therapist and we both went. Kegel exercises and relaxation tapes, toys and role playing. Baldwin was the loving, supportive, and non-pressuring kind of boyfriend. Still, I couldn't do it. One night, my frustration met one of Mama's lectures, and I cracked. I want to be a normal woman, I screamed at her, breaking into tears for the first time over the abuse. I bled all over the place. He made it seem like it was my period come out of turn. That was the first time. After that, he sneaked into my bedroom and picked me up from my bed, carried me to his bed and ran the penis into my 16-year-old vagina. She looked at me in disbelief. Who is he? She asked timidly, as though afraid of the answer. Don't say you don't believe me. If you do, I'll kill you, I screamed, now hysterical. I pulled away as she reached for me. Your father? She whispered. Yes, Mama, your husband, I said, staring at the beautiful white tiling on the floor. How long did this go on for? When did this happen? Mama whispered again, as though willing herself to disappear into the kitchen floor. Right after the separation and until I left for boarding school. And then again when I went to visit him during college break. I stared her in the eye, daring her to take the easy road again. She was always too willing to pin all wrongs on me. Oh, about 17. The sob I'd been expecting finally wrestled itself from her throat and accompanied her words. She usually launched into Farsi when English failed her. Now it all makes sense. oh, wait a minute, she was back to English. Somehow, I had managed to remain calm and tearless during the whole conversation. Ah! You are the reason my marriage fell apart, eh? I know there was another woman. I just never expected it to be my own blood. Abomibekawa ekumtumun. You are delusional. Believe what you will. My father, your husband, the ambassador to Swaziland, was not who everyone thought he was. I stopped off to my room just as my shoulders began to shake. I called the cab driver back and went to Baldwin's for the night. I arrived at 2854 Beresford Drive in a cab. It was a few minutes to midnight. I was 21 and invincible. I didn't exactly have a curfew, but it was understood that I would be home before Mama went to work. A night nurse, Mama was usually readying herself for work around 10. Even though we lived about 10 minutes from the hospital, she usually left the house around 11:15, calculating for unforeseen mishaps. I went in the house quietly so as not to wake my siblings. As I climbed the steps to the bedroom, I noticed that the light illuminating the stairwell was not the nightlight we always left on. This one was coming from Mama's bedroom. I gasped. She had been called off night duty. She was waiting for me when she heard the cab door slam. Where were you? She demanded. At Allen's. Where else? I retorted, now pissed that she'd been waiting up for me. I came to the U.S. to be rid of Grandmama's oppressive rule, and so far, Mama was proving to be no different. Remembering the row we had the last time, I thought I'd politely say goodnight before we duplicated it. As I turned to leave, she began sobbing. Now what? I was getting so tired of taking care of her emotional needs. We all needed our own personal therapist in this house. I just don't want anything to happen to you and your sister, she managed to speak. Nothing will happen, I snapped at her. We always use the same cab company, and Alan writes down the important details before I leave his place. I usually call you before I leave. I always call Alan when I arrive. We got this, all right? I didn't mean that, Mama stopped louder. But then what, Mama? What did you mean? I was exhausted and just wanted to crawl into my bed and chat with Alan. There are bad men out there that can do you harm, she added, visibly uncomfortable with the word rape. Oh, you mean rape me? I didn't even look at her, knowing I was right. The women in my family never could talk about the hard things. Well, what do you care anyway? You weren't around when Uncle was playing with me in his bed. I stuttered. Every day when you were at work, I added triumphantly. I watched for my words to take effect. She did the math. The shock in her face said she had been clueless. Yeah, when you would watch television in his bed, he would touch me and say I would feel good eventually. She was whimpering now. I was crying. I had never told anyone except for Alan, with whom I had refused to have sex even after all that therapy. Cat bastard. I ought to go and find him and torture him. How dare he? Mama began. Save the drama, woman. I cut her off, wiping away my tears angrily. I believe he's dead now, I spat out. You know, I was raped by my father too, she muttered. What? You were? Grandma? What the fuck? She had managed to steer the conversation in her direction again. The last vignette. I saw how he looked at her. She was so young and quite small for her age, but she was beautiful. Her teeth white against that milk chocolate skin. Anyone could see she was beautiful. And that innocent love the whole world smile. She was not sure of herself, though. She seemed a bit frightened of her shadow. I saw how his face twitched when he looked at her. Sometimes I watched him take her to his room and shut the door, turn on the TV real loud, then the door clicked, Sometimes I was running around trying to get ready for work. I couldn't save her. Sometimes we would come out and go order Auntie around, and she would scurry around to bring her favorite food. She would leave the tray at the door and knock timidly. He had warned her never to come in when he was watching TV. I wonder if she knew as well. Our mutual silences will forever hold us hostage. I love the little mouse. She grew on me. Plus, really, what was there not to love? She was quiet, she was shy, she was pretty, and very respectful. She often asked if I needed help with anything in the house. I think she must have been well trained at home. I let her come to my room whenever I was home so she could hide from him. Sometimes he would call for her and I'd answer, saying she was helping me do something. I used to wonder why her mother didn't put her in school right away. She would knock, I would open my door and let her in. She'd sit on my desk chair until I told her she could sit on my bed. Then, placing her coloring book and pencils first, she hopped atop the bed. She'd color as I cleaned or marked my class papers. Sometimes we'd watch her shows together. I knew I'd miss her even before I left. I didn't know how to tell her, so I didn't. The look of betrayal on her face broke my heart. I had to go. My lease was up, and the big man didn't want to give me another year. Her sobs were loud, then her hiccups came. She looked so miserable. I sat with her while her mother tried to peel her off my skirt. In between hiccups, she begged me not to leave, asked her mother to beg me too. That's when I knew for sure he was touching her. My heart broke as my brother came to the door to collect me. Her mother held her while I walked to the door. I knew my little mouse would never be the same. Thank you. Thank you, Buma. How are we doing? I know that this is heavy emotional stuff. I hope that you have some questions, some comments that you're gathering together. We have two more panelists, and then we'll get into a bit of a discussion. We have a therapist, Billy Richardson, is here as well. So, okay. Nana Dakwa-Sachema is a feminist activist, communications professional, entrepreneur, and a writer. Nana currently manages the communications portfolio at the African Women's Development Fund, is a co-owner of Maxi, a clothing and events organizing company, and curates Adventures from the Bedrooms of African Women, this highly acclaimed and widely read blog on African women and sexuality. All right.
Thank you very much. I started a blog with a woman called Malaika Jeshi, and for a while she had a series on the blog called It's So Swat It Seems, which is a fictional series. I'm choosing to read from one, I guess it's more like a chapter, entitled Windows and Doors, Ways of Escape. When Ifosua got back to her office after her lunch with Naapili, she was more than shaken. It had not gone anywhere near how she planned, and that surprised her. Ifosua had always prided herself about being calm under pressure, and generally very pragmatic. But there was something about Naapili that unsettled her. She wanted to find out what it was. But since she had told Naapili to basically fuck herself, there was no chance of that. Naapili would have been a useful ally because her husband was an influential man. Ian Blanston was a senior pastor of one of Ghana's three mega churches, and his congregation included statesmen, businessmen, and all manner of scoundrels looking for salvation. More importantly, the wives and mistresses of these men attended church with them, and it was they who were Ifosua's true targets. She was going to get to them by aligning herself intimately with Naapili, but now she had dashed those chances. Ifosua buried herself in her work, trying to sort out the details of two accounts that were left on her desk. She quickly analyzed the risks involved in the Poku venture. The stenches that plagued this small northern town were no longer a threat, and the Ashanti investor who wanted to set up a beef processing plant would do well there. The people were willing and the resources were plentiful. It would be up to him to generate enough bribe money to satisfy the MP for the region. His behavior analysis showed him to be highly deceptive and greedy, but compliant enough to see significant change for his region if he were well compensated. She moved on to the next account, the sweets. By 6 p.m., she was still poring over the details. Something just didn't add up. It was too perfect. There was absolutely no risk in this account. To the untrained mind, the credit seemed like a no-brainer and a sure thing. But if a soul knew better, nothing is ever for certain. Everything has a price. What do you have there? The sound of Mr. Watch's voice jolted a point of Fosua from her thoughts. The Swedish account, she replied. I'm looking at the behavior analysis grid and the numbers. Something's not quite right. Mr. Watch's face darkened. That's not your account, he said tersely. Yeah, I know, retorted Fosua. And that's actually something I wanted to talk to you and Mr. Phillips about. When you contracted me, you promised me a spot in upper management. Ever since I got here, I've had the title, yes, but not the responsibility. All you've had me do is the work of a first-year analyst, and I, Harold Watchett, held up his hand, signaling for silence and cutting it off. You know what your problem is, Ms. Jinfi. You haven't been vetted yet. You are neither tested nor proven. Everyone, anyone who has ever advanced to this company possesses one thing that sets them apart and makes them special. You mean a penis? It was why I said tone as phobic. Mr. Boachet chuckled dryly. Experience. Everyone here has real-world applicable experience. You, my dear, have none. I will as soon as I hash out the Swedish account, he replied confidently. Sir, she added. No. No, you won't. That account is too important and too detailed, even for you. Brilliant as you may be, you are not to touch it. But, it was so objected, do not touch that account, Miss Jinfi. That is all. Mr. Boachet said, rising from his perch and taking the file with him. Ifosua nodded and bid him a good night before preparing to leave herself. Too bad for Mr. Boachet, she had already saved the data on her pen drive. Now Kwele was still in the study when Ian walked in. The smell of liqueur and the spirit of her despondency were heavy in the room. She looked up and greeted her husband with red watery eyes. He looked back with disgust. You're drunk, he spat. Yes, I am. How dare you drink in your condition? How dare you fuck the maid in my condition, she shot back. When he slapped her, she momentarily lost her vision. When she regained it, all she could see was the healthy frame of her husband looming over her. She hated him, and loved him so much. You know that we have dinner with the bishop tonight, he railed. You know how important this meeting is, especially at this time. Napoli nodded in agreement. She cast her eyes downward, showing her contrition. Ian, I'm sorry. I am. I was just so upset because when I came home, you were... She couldn't even bring herself to say it. She didn't have to. What I do in my own house with my own staff is my business. Your only job as my wife is to keep me happy. You don't have to concern yourself with anything else, he said. Natalie nodded. She understood completely why her husband was sleeping with a maid. Who would ever believe it? He was a man of God, and she was an illiterate from nowhere. Any allegations she might ever make would be laughed out of court or the newspapers. Some would believe her, but most would doubt her. Ian's voice cut into her and ended her inward reflection. You've never had to work a day in your life, he finished. Don't start acting up, or we won't always be that way. Get yourself cleaned up. We leave in 45 minutes. When Ian left the room, Napoli let herself cry for a few more minutes before going up to her and her husband's bedroom. At least the maid had had the decency to make the bed. Of course, she would have to decide. This was a third maid. Nakwele would not stand for a third miscarriage brought on by grief. If nothing else, she was strong enough to do that. She was strong enough to save this baby. So that's the first piece by my co-blogger and co-founder of Adventures, Malaika Dichi. The second piece I wrote myself. What inspired the piece was, a couple of years ago, I went on holiday to Turkey by myself. I felt really proud of myself. I felt like, yes, I have arrived. I have paid for a plane fare myself. I have traveled to a country on my own, and I am here on holiday. Plus, at that time, I was feeling fly as hell. I'd lost weight. My locks were at a good stage. You know, I was getting fun. Whenever I was walking up and down the road, people would be like, Naomi Campbell, Beyonce.
Yes.
So you can imagine, I was feeling like, you know, I'm all that in a bag of chips. And the resort that I stayed in, I used to see all these signs for like Turkish baths. And I've never had a Turkish bath before. So this is what this piece is about. And yeah, it goes back and forth. It starts with a conversation, a video with my friend, and I start reflecting on my experience in Turkey. And it's entitled, Becoming Aroused Against Your Will. I was BBMing with my friend earlier today, and somehow the conversation turns to situations where you get turned on against your will. Me, what are you up to? Him, I'm trying to read in bed, and my mate's 7-year-old daughter, who has a crush on me, has jumped in bed with me and is talking my ear off. Oh, how sweet. It's a good thing you're not a pedophile. It's a very good thing I'm not. This conversation got us chatting about situations where you get turned on against your will. I shared how I had read about a new mother who was so concerned when she got aroused suckling her newborn baby that she called the police. He shared his fear that, what if I see my mate's penis in the gym shower and get a hard on? Does that make me gay? My response, as for you guys and your stupid homophobic fears. Anyway, we talked about that subject ad nauseum. A few years ago, I went on holiday to a resort in Turkey. I was traveling by myself and spent many blissful days lying on the beach, sightseeing and drinking cocktails in the bar below my hotel. Walking through the resort, I would see numerous signs for Turkish baths and massages. I decided to walk into one facility to make some inquiries. I chatted with a lovely Turkish lady and made an appointment for 11 a.m. the following day. She advised me to bring a bikini for my treatment the following day. The following day, I arrived at 11 a.m. and was welcomed by a Turkish man who showed me to the sauna. After the sauna, he asked if I would like to lie in the bath, which he had already run. Somehow, I didn't feel comfortable lying in this bath because I wasn't sure how clean it was. So I declined the offer. Ready for your massage, Nana? He asked. Yes, I responded, wondering all the while where the lovely lady I had seen the day before was. He walked with me to the massage room. Take off your swimming costume and lie down, he said. Oh, okay. Can I have a towel, please? He handed me a small towel and asked me to lie on my front. After massaging my back and legs for a while, he asked me to turn over. Can I have another towel, please, I asked, and covered my boobs as I turned over. I continued to close my eyes and tried hard to relax, but couldn't quite relax. Was it my imagination, or were his fingers lingering on my inner thighs? Did he just flick uncomfortably close to my vagina, or was it my imagination? Nana, you like massage? He asked. It's okay. He started to massage my upper body. No, I definitely felt him flick my nipple, I thought. I opened my eyes, and the small towel I had covered my boobs with had strayed far south of where I placed them. I could see my nipples, and they were darkened and engorged. I pulled the towel back over my boobs. I definitely could not relax now. And somehow, I didn't have the courage to get up and leave. Not when you left the bed, she asked again. It's okay, was my response. Somehow, I continued to lie there, waiting for the massage to end, feeling my body respond against my will to this man who I thought was frankly icky. Now, in terms of getting aroused against your will, I think this is fairly low-level stuff. I could have gotten up at any point in time and said, no, I'm not enjoying this massage, and walked out. But I spent ages asking myself,